Hello, you're very welcome to the 99%.
You're Michael McAndrew.
And you're Lucian Wadding.
It's our third episode. We're delighted to be back for entertaining you for one more week. Isn't it great? Well, not just one more week, hopefully.
Yeah.
There'll be more weeks in the future.
You know, this week we got some really interesting stuff coming up. We got a very special interview.
Will we reveal who it's with?
No. You have to get through all this rubbish of us talking.
Okay. Well, there's going to be a fascinating interview with one of the most interesting people I've ever spoken to, I tell you that. And we've got him on the show later on.
Absolutely.
So look forward to that. We're going to be talking about loads of stuff that's happened in the news this week. The hunting ban, repealing, cancelled. James Holmes found guilty. Loads of interesting stuff out of Comic-Con and all sorts of
air
stuff.
Air code, yeah.
We'll get to that later on. So it's going to be a fun week. Thank you, Michael, for welcoming me back into your studio. We're back.
Yeah, we're doing this
face-to-face.
In person, face-to-face for like...
And reunited, and it feels so good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably gonna do this like every few episodes, I guess.
Every few episodes.
Yeah.
It's a long trek out here. I got lost on the way.
You did.
I was driving around for about an hour.
Yeah, you were like, is it past the farmhouse? I'm like, you go right at the farmhouse.
I phone up Michael. I'm like, it's the pony farm, and then where's the house?
The pony farm. It's like right next to the pony farm.
I get lost. And there's also these...
To be fair, it's an incredibly difficult place to find.
It is.
I mean, it's really kind of in the middle of of kind of nowhere.
Yeah. So it actually is. So you'll never be able to find our studio.
Never.
Never.
No.
Michael, have you been reading Ghost at a Watchman by Harper Lee?
No, I haven't.
Well, I have.
Yeah, so it's out, but I mean, I had a look in
some
bookshop
yesterday. Came out on
Tuesday. And just, they don't really have any books in stock.
Okay, yeah, it probably sold out.
I was
really
looking
fast.
At all the bad bookshops.
They had them in Dubray yesterday. Easons were sold out, I believe.
Oh, yeah, I was in Easons.
Came out on Tuesday. I got up at about 9 a.m. on Tuesday. I see a headline. The 10 most cringe-inducing quotes from Harper Lee's to Ghost of Watchmen. I thought, this can't be good. It's not a good novel by any standards. I am now, I'd say I'm almost halfway through. I am 45% of the way through. And there's no hook in the plot. There's really no plot. It's just a lot of... I mean, it was written before To Kill a Mockingbird. So there's a lot of stuff in it that Harper Lee obviously took and then put into Kill a Mockingbird. So there's flashbacks to the children playing and their childhood. And stuff that would have been present day in To Kill a Mockingbird is now treated as flashback. And it isn't very interesting. And the present day aspects of the book are extraordinarily racist. Atticus Finch, and this is a mild spoiler alert, but you've probably heard it in the media over the past few days. Atticus Finch, the great literary, you know, the greatest literary hero of all time. He's been voted on a number of occasions. He's an advocate for progress and for equality. And Atticus Finch here is a card-carrying member of the Ku Klux Klan. Now, I don't know if you know this, but the Ku Klux Klan don't really like African Americans.
No.
And, you know, Atticus Finch defended one so heroically in To Kill a Mockingbird in this false accusation, against this false accusation of rape. And it's such a brilliant story. And this sequel is just destroying the legacy of these characters and of her as an author, I feel. And it's not good at all.
I mean, I thought that... I thought you were messing when you told me that.
No, that's...
I was like,
100%,
yeah. Atticus Finch is a member of the Ku Klux. That's a good one.
100% legitimate plot twist in the book.
Wow. Okay, well, there you go. Mm. But it was written before.
It was written before.
Before To Kill a
Mockingbird.
But
it's no excuse for just
bad
storytelling.
To Kill a Mockingbird is quite a good book, you know. So
quite a good book, yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the 10 best-selling books of all time, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's not one of the... It's not the books of all time.
Oh, no, it's definitely not.
But it's best-selling, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think that she's not a great author. And my problem with this book is To Kill a Mockingbird has a certain level of profundity to it, because it is the story of this child growing up, looking back on her childhood, and, you know, that works on a certain level.
Yeah.
But Ghost at a Watchman has no profundity, no poetry, simply because Harper Lee is not a brilliant writer of that. She doesn't write very poetically. She writes in a very matter-of-fact manner. And there's very little humor, and there's very little charm. And if a book has none of these things... And the story is non-existent. There is no plot. So if a novel has none of these things, if it has no poetry, profundity, humor, or, you know, thrills, then it really doesn't seem worth reading at all. And it's very much an empty novel with no substance. I'm halfway through and I'm going to keep reading because it's a big deal.
I'm probably not going to. I'm not a big reader.
You should listen to the audiobook. It's read by Reese Witherspoon. It's really short. It's about 4 hours total. It's The audiobook is very good. Reese Witherspoon.
Does she do a good job?
She does. She does a lot of different voices. There's a lot of singing in the book, singing of gospel. She does that well. She's a good singer.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Well, you can get that now on audible.com.
Nice plug there, Lucy.
We're not sponsored by Audible.
Lucy has loads of stories this week.
I have quite a few.
I do not live an interesting life. Well, you live a much more interesting...
Not in general, but this week I had a couple of interesting encounters, yeah. Well, which shall I talk for? Last weekend, the Galway Film Fly was on here in Galway where we live, which is a local film festival. And this year they had some interesting guests over. They had Pete Docter and Jonas Rivera, who are the director and producer of Inside Out, Pixar's latest film, which I have now seen 3 times. And I can distinctly say is not only the best film of this year, but quite possibly the best film of the last 3-4 years. And so these two gentlemen came to Galway and I went to see them introduced into the film. So that was, you know, an interesting encounter. They were charming, as I expected. Mm-hmm. And also got to spend some time with a very highly respected Iranian director, Mr. Makhmalbaf. And that was a fascinating time. But those things aside, the most
this isn't the story.
That's not the story. No one cares about all of those fascinating people. Yeah. The most interesting encounter I've had this week was with a hellish, horrific product known as Doritos Roulette.
Yeah.
Have you tried this, Michael?
You know, I haven't. I like Doritos. Mm. I'm more of a fan of the mild, you know, the blue pack rather than the red. I'm not a spicy guy.
Mm.
So,
well, I'm a spicy guy, or at least I was until last night at 6:07 p.m. A packet of Doritos.
Dorito Roulette here.
A packet of Dorito Roulette was purchased by my family, you know, just as an experiment to see what it was like. So I take a Dorito, and the first Dorito, it was tangy cheese. We're safe. The second Dorito, tangy cheese. We're safe. The third Dorito was extremely spicy. There was a warning on the front of this packet saying extremely spicy. It was the spiciest potato chip I have ever consumed in my life. I ran for the sink. I was splashing water on my face. I then realized that water was only making it worse. So I went for milk. That didn't help. So then I started to eat cram biscuits into my mouth. And, I mean, meanwhile, people in my family were having much worse experiences. One person who will remain nameless was, you know, coughing and spluttering. They had tears pouring down their face.
Oh, no.
They lost their sense of smell for several minutes. And another person ended up being quite ill for quite a while in the bathroom. So
it
really didn't go well. These Doritos at Roulette are dangerous. And immediately after we consume them, we turn on the television. The front page today of the Sun newspaper, because, you know, reputable newspapers, of course. What do they put on the front page?
The Sun.
Hard-hitting political news. No, they put on, Dorito almost killed my child. So this child in a British school had a severe asthma attack after eating a Dorito Roulette, and the company are denying any responsibility for this, as they should. It's not their fault that a child with asthma consumed something which has a warning on the front that it will cause you to have problems if you are not okay with spicy food. So it's dangerous. It's satanic. I would ban it. But, you know, if you are somebody who doesn't enjoy to consume recreational drugs and you want some sort of insane mad experience brought on by food, I would recommend Doritos Roulette for that.
Well, I mean, it's there's chilies out there that are probably way more spicy.
Apparently this is 10 times spicier than a jalapeno. 100 times.
100 times spicy?
Ten times
is a lot.
10 times seems reasonable.
I mean, jalapenos are quite spicy.
This is 10 times spicier than the jalapeno.
Well, there you go. Yeah, well, I mean, you can buy a ghost pepper or, you know, something. That's like off the charts.
Spice. Oh, those are crazy. Yeah, I've never consumed one. But yeah. Or a chicken, what's the crazy one? Chicken vindaloo.
Yeah, I haven't tried that.
Vindaloo does terrible things to your digestion system.
Yeah. Stay away from spicy food, folks. Yeah.
That's our public service warning for this week.
All right, let's talk about Air Code.
Air Code, okay.
Yeah.
Let's Michael, talk about how excited are you about Air Code?
Well, not very, actually. Air Code is kind of like a... It's a...
Well, on the subject of Air Code, first of all, why don't you just read out this this letter?
I'm a bit ill today.
This letter was addressed, and read out this address. This letter was delivered to the person it was intended for. This is written on an envelope in pencil.
Yeah, an envelope from Royal Mail. It says, your man Henderson, that boy with the glasses who's doing the PhD up there at Queen's in Belfast.
That's the address they put on the envelope. And it was delivered to the person who it was intended for.
Yep. That's crazy.
So, do we need air codes in this country?
They spelled Donegal. Donegol.
Donegal.
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 So, when we have a postal system in Ireland where letters can be delivered like that, do we need the government to be spending millions and millions of euros that could be spent on social housing, feeding the homeless, on an air code system?
I mean, I'm a bit ignorant on this. Was it a private company hired to do this?
I have absolutely no... I know OnPost did not do it. So
I think the government hired a private company to
Same
do
as Irish Water.
So that private company's intentions are to make money.
Mm.
So basically, the government decided to do this so that they can more easily keep track of all of the houses that are in Ireland.
They're watching us. They're spying on us.
And
down with big government.
No, it actually is. It's a step towards another step towards Big Brother.
Yeah.
Where the government track everything that you do.
Mm.
Right? It'll get to the point now where, let's say you have two bank accounts.
Yeah.
One of your bank accounts is what you use for, like, bills and stuff. And then you have another bank account that you put money into to just live every month, right?
Yeah.
And let's say 1 month, you can't pay your mortgage.
Mm.
There's not enough money in the bank account. The bank can see that.
Mm.
Well, it might get to the point now where the bank will be able to see that you have another bank account with all this money in it.
Yeah.
They'll say, no. You've got all this money here. We're going to use that for the mortgage. Mm. You know, you cannot do anything. They're talking about taking the water charges straight out of your salary.
Yeah, but there's no way they're going to be able to get that in, though. There's too much opposition in the government right now, I think.
Thank God.
There's too much opposition to it in public. I think if the government now... I mean, there are especially elderly people who are now fearing that... I mean, their pensions, that their different social welfare payments are going to have the water charge taken out of it if they refuse to pay. And currently, that's not going to happen. You'd have to go to court for that to happen. The statistics that came out this week, I think 58% of people have not paid. 52%, 58%. Between 56% have not paid. And, I mean, the government cannot do that currently. If they tried to get that implemented, I think there would be just such a backlash against it. There would be riots in the streets, quite literally. And I think they would never be able to get past a certain point with trying to implement that. But this air code system... The convenience of it just seems to me to be outweighed by how absurd it is that this amount of money was spent on something that is not a necessity. It cannot be used by emergency services. They can't use it. It doesn't work with that system.
What?
So no purpose there. So its only purpose is to have letters and packages delivered and to have packages from Amazon delivered to your house faster than previously. That's basically the only purpose of the system.
It's not going to do anything for me because... The way that it currently works for me is they send UPS send the packages to Lion Couriers in Galway City for me, and then Lion Couriers have a contract with UPS, so they get paid so much for doing it locally here in Galway.
Yeah, yeah.
So all my Amazon packages come from Lion Couriers, and it's the lad from Lion Couriers who's like ringing me up. He's like, "Where's our house now?" Oh, it's past the church, and you turn right.
The pony farm.
Oh, it's right there by the pony farm. Oh, sure, I know where you're at. I'll be down there in 10 minutes. I'm just on the way back from Uachtaráin. So, like, you know, this is the way that it works.
Yeah.
And I always get my packages. It's not going to make a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to make the courier's job a little bit easier. He won't have to ring me.
Yeah.
That's the only difference.
Yeah.
I won't be getting stuff any faster.
Because he can get it on GPS.
He can get it on GPS anyway, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, it's not... So, I've already had to use my air code.
Oh, right. Lucky
because, I'm a little bit annoyed because Amazon... I use Amazon.co.uk.
Yeah, I saw your tweets this week about it.
Yeah. I use Amazon quite a lot. And I love Amazon because they've... like everything.
Yeah.
But it does take quite a while for packages to get over here.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to buy some stuff on Amazon this week, and it's been getting worse and worse over the last few months. I haven't been able to get stuff shipped to Ireland.
Yeah.
It comes up every time, like probably it started happening maybe a few months ago, where maybe 50% of the stuff that I clicked on would not ship to Ireland.
Mm.
I presume it's because of the currency exchange rate.
It must be.
It only started happening from... It only happened with, you know, third-party... it only happened with third-party sellers to start off with. But now Amazon, the official Amazon... You know how Amazon sells stuff officially?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they have third-party sellers?
Yeah, the sellers, yeah.
I bought some stuff from Amazon officially, and they did this week.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't ship it to Ireland. So I've had to use Parcel Motel, which is a great service, where they basically, they'll ship it to the north of Ireland.
And then it comes to the machine.
So I actually, the package just came in there this morning. But so the thing is, like, it's unbelievable. I have to use this Parcel Motel thing just so I can buy my packages.
Yeah.
So I sent a tweet to Amazon, and they got back. The Amazon help desk kind of got back, and they said, oh, no, we do ship to Ireland with their super saver free shipping.
Yeah.
And they sent the link, and I was like, oh, you obviously don't get it. So I took a snapshot of where it said this item will not ship to Ireland, blah, 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 blah. And they never got back. So, but yeah, no,
great
for
customer service from
for
Amazon.
For Parcel Motel, they asked for my air code.
Oh.
For some strange reason.
That's odd.
Because they don't send it to my address anyway. But
I've got mine printed off, stuck up on the fridge.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
I can't remember mine.
I'm just so proud of it. It has a lot of H's and T's. I can't
remember.
Yeah, it's
H91 or
mine
whatever.
Mine is 5HT. I don't know. I think they're decided by random, because I'm pretty sure my next door neighbor's one is completely different.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, because
it's completely different.
A lot of the people around this area have the same first three.
They
have one letter and then two numbers and then the space.
Okay.
It's the same letter and two numbers. So the first three digits are the same for a lot of people around here.
Hmm. Well, that's air code for you. It's an exciting new system here in Ireland.
No.
So there were two big things this week. The first one was on Wednesday, Parliament in the United Kingdom were supposed to be having a new vote on whether or not to repeal the ban on fox hunting.
That's right.
I am a bit involved in this issue. Well, I'm not involved. I'm very passionate about this issue. I think fox hunting is one of the most disgusting things done by human beings. There's absolutely no excuses for it. In Britain, especially. And the Conservative government, now that they are in full power, trying to get this brought back in. And previously to last week, it seems
this is the most pressing issue in the
it seemed as if this
UK
was,
Parliament
it
right
seemed
now.
As if this, it absolutely is. It seemed as if this was going to be kept on because the Conservatives, of course, they're, you know, embedded in wealth, and the upper classes want to be able to go and kill foxes whenever they want because they enjoy seeing animals
naturally
suffer. So Labour don't have that many seats, and Labour were going to vote against it. Most of their members was a free vote, and some Conservatives were too, but it wasn't enough. And the Scottish National Party, who of course now have a insane huge number of seats in Parliament, said they were not going to vote because it did not involve Scotland. This only affected the country of England. They changed their mind, and thank God they did, because as a result of them changing their mind, David Cameron realised this he couldn't win, and to avoid the embarrassment, he called off the vote, and the hunting ban remains in place for another few years, which is fantastic news. I was so relieved. Oh, those
great
poor foxes, they're saved.
Yeah. Why would you not ban this?
Because they think it's fun. They like to see animals writhing in pain on the ground.
I mean, fox hunting is legal in Ireland.
There's doubt over it, but people do it here.
They do it here. They do it in my car. They go out every so often.
Fetch me my pistol.
But you see, fox hunting here is a little bit, I think it sounds a little bit different, because they go out on horses. Do they go out on horses in the UK?
You go out on horses, you bring hounds with you.
Yes,
the hounds rip
right.
the foxes to shreds. You stand and laugh in your silly costume.
That's
any
correct.
Person who does that should be in prison.
Here they never actually catch any foxes.
They're terrorizing them. The dogs are chasing the foxes. And
sure, I mean
them.
They might see.
And the only excuse anyone ever tries to make in Britain is, but the foxes are pests. They're damaging farms. Then let the farmers shoot the foxes. You do not have upper class people going out in hordes with their hounds, which are also being treated horrifically.
Oh, no, I agree.
And tearing the foxes to shreds while they watch on laugh, and they maybe stick it up above their fireplace.
Yeah,
it's an ornament of their great masculinity.
I don't think foxes do any damage. We have a,
we used to have a fox exaggerated
around here, and and it just goes about its
business. Exaggerated.
They're
very
foxes are very shy. You know, they kind of stay.
But they're probably my favorite animal, and I really love foxes. And
what does the fox say? What noise do they make? They kind of make.
Does the fox say?
I can't remember. It's like
they go through all the noises, and eventually they decide it's this strange kind of whistling.
They do make they make like a really weird noise.
So, like hedgehogs as well. Hedgehogs make this screech.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, if they're in pain. Oh, it's tragic, but it's tragic. Fascinating noise.
Tragic noise.
So the other justice that was achieved this week was James Holmes' verdict was revealed last night by the jury. Do you know who James Holmes is?
No.
Okay. James Holmes is the man who shot 78 or something people in the
midnight
screening of The Dark Knight Rises.
Of course I do. I've seen I saw it on the news. It's just the name.
It's, you know what? It's a good thing you don't remember his name because, it's better not to remember the names of people who want you to remember their names. But anyway, no, so he did that, and he also did all sorts of crazy shit afterwards where he just filled his apartment with booby traps and bombs and just all sorts of stuff to kill the police, basically. And his defense was that he was insane. And although they said he does have, you know, severe mental health problems, and no one could deny that, and mental illness, he was not, he did not have schizophrenia, or at least he was not in a schizophrenic state at the time that he committed this. It was he laid all his plans out in advance, and he was sane of mind. So he has been found guilty of first degree murder and of, I think it was 119 different things he was found guilty of.
Wow.
For every person he killed, every attempted murder, the stuff he did in his apartment, all sorts of stuff. But his sentencing has not been read yet, so we don't know. I mean, it seems pretty certain now that he is going to get the death penalty at Colorado. Is not known for the death penalty. It's not illegal, but they've only had one in the last 40 years. The current governor says that he will not allow anyone to be executed while he is currently governor.
Okay.
Of course, the appeals process that Holmes would go through would last long enough that the governor would probably be out of office. But, you know, it's obviously a divisive issue on whether people think he deserves this or not. James Holmes, it should be known, and this isn't talked about enough in the media, attempted suicide twice in the months after his arrest, which means that killing him would actually be satisfying his wishes, which when somebody has done such a heinous crime, you wouldn't want to do that. You'd want to actually punish them in the way that they see as punishment. But, you know, I'm against capital punishment in general. But, I mean, obviously there are people who would like to see James Holmes killed, and there are reasons for that. But, you know, I would not currently agree with that, really.
For safety.
For safety.
If that guy got out, he could do some serious damage.
That's not going to happen.
Oh, it's. I mean, he's never going to. Yeah, I know. Yeah, but I'm just.
The thing is, the one other thing people say, and I love disproving these cliched arguments. People say the death penalty is good because we shouldn't have to put him up in a prison for 50 years. Fact, it is a fact
that is true.
Executing somebody costs more than keeping them in jail for life. It actually does.
Because
I don't know
of the,
because of the
whatever
because of the
thing.
Either
you have to do it in have to do it in a I think fair way.
Well, obviously, I mean, I don't know if Colorado has the electric chair. I'd imagine they don't. Most,
God,
I mean,
no,
they're
no,
pretty
no.
progressive.
They don't use electric chairs.
They
anymore,
do in some states. They've gone back to it in some states. I'd say Colorado are more.
That is horrible.
It's disgusting. I think it's inhumane. But they have the lethal injection, obviously, and I think that is so expensive that it's actually pretty much as expensive as keeping him in life for keeping him in jail for life. So people who argue that that's a waste of taxpayers' money, I think it is either way. That's just how the justice system works.
Okay.
So that we'll find out the sentencing very soon. Our special guest this week on the show is the co-writer of a brand new film that's coming out in UK and Irish cinemas called Eden. It's directed by Mia Hansen-Løve, the highly acclaimed film director. It is a story influenced by her brother Sven, his time as, you know, one of the primary dance music figures in France and around the world in the 1990s and early 2000s. The film charts his rise and fall of his career, of the career of a fictional character called Paul, who is in many ways influenced and inspired by Sven's real experiences. And it's a fascinating film. It's entertaining, it's moving, and it is very, very, it has a great rhythm and energy. energy to it.
Driven by music, of course.
Driven absolutely by music. And it is in cinemas in the UK and Ireland on Friday, the 24th of July. And we got to talk to Sven Hansen-Löve, the man who inspired the film, on the phone a little earlier. And here's how the interview went.
So, Sven, this is a very personal film. Whose idea was it to originally document this period of dance music in such a way? And was it always going to be influenced by your personal experiences specifically?
No, it's a good point. It was my sister's idea first, because she wanted to do a film about our generation and the music. She wanted to go in a new direction in her career, movie career.
Right.
And she was a new challenge for her to do that. So, but she didn't know exactly first what the direction she wanted to take. So, but she knew that I was part of that scene, and she started by asking me a lot of questions, like regular conversation and talking, and she took endless notes of what I said, and then it became, she thought it could be interesting to build a character that would be loosely based on my experience, but she said like a main character would be a good reflection of that period. And so, and slowly working on it, writing and with me, and then became a little more like loosely based on my life in a way, yeah.
The character in the film, he does seem very much to be, you know, a reflection of your experiences, but his name is Paul, so he's not, you know, you directly, but...
Exactly.
A lot of things are the same, like the name of the duo is Cheers, so how much of the character Paul's story is fictional and how much is directly taken from your personal experiences?
It's hard to say because we had a long time to work, and it's a mixture of real things, like real anecdotes, and something that my sister invented, something that I invented, something that I think were real, but I'm not so sure anymore because my memory is tricky, and I have some memories that I'm not quite sure. So it's a mixture of all this, and probably half of it is really the truth or the reality, and half of it is more or less invented, I suppose. But it's hard to say.
Yeah. So were there things that you might have, you know, that weren't part of your personal experiences, but from people you know or people you might have heard stories from the same period that you might have incorporated into Paul's story as well for dramatic effect?
Yes, absolutely. Once again, as a mixed thing, like things that we thought it could be interesting to add that, even if it's not real. All fiction is a bit like that. I think it's even like fiction that you think is completely invented, but in fact it's not completely invented. So yeah, it's a typical work on fiction, I think. But there is also a documentary side aspect of it, of course, because it's also talking about the music scene. So we had to be really precise on all the details, and that gives an aspect of documentary. Some people say it's a docu-fiction in a way. I don't think it is really a docu-fiction, but there is probably an aspect that is a bit like that in the film.
Right. So the music in the film plays a really, really important role. Did you know that in advance that you'd be incorporating the music, and what music would you be using in different scenes?
Absolutely, because my sister, for that film, she really, really wanted to have the rights of all the songs before the shooting, because she wanted to shoot all the scenes knowing exactly which song she was going to put in each scene. And even more than that, she's like a maniac, because she knew, okay, in that scene, I'm going to put that song at 2 minutes and 30 seconds, you know, and from 2 minutes and 30 seconds to 3 minutes and 15 seconds. She was like super precise, even though she could change a bit after in editing, but she had a very precise thing in her mind. And when we shot, she wanted to play the songs, especially you have to understand, when you shot a scene in a club scene, you have to shot the same scene with the music and without the music. You have to have both, really, and you have to have many takes using both things. So it was kind of absolutely necessary to know exactly which song we are going to use. And so it was a lot of work on the right music sound before the shooting.
And similarly to that, you used, I know, a lot of the real locations from your, you know, your time during this period. You used, you filmed in those locations. Was it difficult to get access to film in those locations, or were they willing to just allow you to come in?
It was really depending on the places. We could do almost all of them in the real locations, and it was rather easy for many of them. But we had a rough time with the Queen. We couldn't do it at the Queen because the guy is really complicated. He's a businessman, and by the way, the Queen just closed this year, which is kind of strange that the year that the film was released, they closed the place. Anyway. And so we couldn't shoot at the end. Well, he said he finally gave us a green light, but then we had already decided to do it somewhere else where it would be easier. But we found a place called La Machine Moulin Rouge, which is, looks a bit like the Queen, and we called the place the King, which is kind of a joke, of course. But the funny thing is that some people even watched the film, some people that went to the Queen and didn't realize it wasn't the Queen. Because we made some decoration and we had a production designer really looks like the Queen. So, and the other place we couldn't shoot was the Cirque d'Hiver, which is a circus. And we wanted to shoot there because there was a party there in the past. It was really great. You know, the party in the circus was really incredible. But we couldn't do it because it was just too expensive. It was really, really super expensive. So we had to find another place. And we shot that scene in a place called Musée des Arts Forains, which is a great place also, and it's a bit like a circus because it's a museum, but it's a museum about the fun fair from the past, and it's really magical place, so it was kind of similar.
You said there that some people who'd been to the venue, people who'd been to the Queen didn't even know it was not the real location. And how did you see during the 1990s and early 2000s, how did you see these locations change, and did they kind of change and develop and evolve in time with the actual music itself as that progress?
When more the technology was so important in all those music scenes and also in the clubs. And by the way, the Queen changed, because if you see the Queen in the 90s, it was more like almost like a warehouse, you know, like rough warehouse, and which was cool. But the guy put a lot of money on technology. He bought this very sound system, but not only the light system, which is incredible, but it's so technology. So the place from a sort of warehouse became a computerized club, you know, and I didn't like it so much after. It's just too modern in a way or something, you know.
Right. So the film's dialogue alternates between English and French, yet this is barely noticeable to the viewer. Is this kind of symbolic somewhat of the music itself, which transcends language and culture in its appeal?
We hope so. It's hard to say, you know, but we hope so. And also the music itself, there are a lot of lyrics, as you know, and some of them are political, and some of them are, but they reflect well the period, and they say something, and it's in English, and English is an international language, and so yeah, it's probably saying something to all the people. It could be saying something to all the people, and also my sister tried in the selection, and I did also to put songs that they had a meaning also in the lyrics, and the meaning of the lyrics were close to the film. Like, for example, the Daft Punk song that you're within, it was really my sister's choice, and she wanted to put that song in the film because she said the lyrics also were so close to what the character was feeling at that moment of the story. So,
do you think that kind of, you know, society and, you know, politics or whatever and culture in general influenced dance music as it changed during your career?
A lot, because with my sister, we think there is two time periods, like a very positive, optimistic time period where the film starts, by the way, in the 90s, which was people were less anxious and they were not thinking so much about the future because we were thinking as a young people that everything is going to go well for us and we all will have some gigs, money, whatever, job, work, and be a creative and everything. But then things changed starting in the year 2000, and especially with 9/11, you know, it's like a sort of a middle point where things started to change and there was a financial crisis, a bribe crisis and everything, and the terrorist things. And then I think that for the young people, the period is more anxious, they're more worried about their future and everything. And that reflects in the music, obviously. Like the music is more deep, I think. It's less happy, but it doesn't mean it's better or it's worse or anything. It's just different.
One thing, although, you know, there is romance in the film between Paul and these women in his life at various points. But really, at least to me, the film felt like somewhat of a love story between Paul and the music.
Absolutely.
You know, definitely. With its ups and its downs. So how would you feel about that?
Completely. It's exactly what we wanted to express. Because the main character, his main love story is for music. He has a sort of passion that, and he goes crazy because of that. The same way you could go crazy for the love of one person, you could lose yourself, really, and losing the sense of reality and everything. And that's why he has so many girlfriends, and that's why he's changing all the time. Because those girlfriends, they realize they have to share that guy with someone else, and that someone is not someone real, it's just music. And that's what makes it very complicated to have a serious relationship with someone, because he's so much into this love affair with a specific music.
And the film's story felt to me like it played out like a journey in terms both of Paul's life and the changes he goes through, and in terms of the evolution of the music scene. How would you contrast kind of the character's life and the changes in the style of music?
I would say that at one point he realized that the music he loves doesn't evolve anymore, and just like himself. He cannot evolve, he cannot move on, because he's stuck in something. He's stuck in the time period, he's stuck in his own professional life, he's stuck in the parties, he cannot wake up. You know, he should wake up and just realize it's over, the party's over, you have to go back home in a way. And he can't do that, he won't stay in the party, he cannot evolve. The same way the music he loves, like especially the garage, deep house, doesn't evolve anymore, it's dying. And when I did the Cheers party, the last ones, like at La Coupole last years, it was pretty intense, but it's also, I got the feeling it was intense because we knew the music was dying. And all the people that came, they were really into the music, but they all knew the music is living the last moments, it's going to be different after it. And yeah, there is absolutely a link between the character's feeling and the change in the music.
Did you have any experience with filmmaking before you started working on Eden? Because, of course, your sister is a very accomplished film director. But had you ever been involved in her process at all?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, but that was a long, long, long time ago. I've made some cinema studies, but very, very long time ago, like 20 years before. So. And I was always watching the tons of film. I've seen it above, really. But I worked on her on my sister's previous films, but I did something completely different. I was making the casting and taking care of the extras in her first three films. But it gave me a touch of what it is. But of course, it's only on this film that I really went deeper into the process of filmmaking.
And final question now. As somebody with such a long history with dance music, where do you see the future of dance music in terms of technology and people's consumption of it? Where does dance music go from here?
Well, it's difficult, but it's only getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and you get more access to the music via internet. And there are more and more young people doing this music. And I think it's only going to evolve in a good way, because the fact it's getting bigger, you get a lot of crap, but you get a lot of great things also. So I'm rather optimistic for dance music, and I just wonder if a new, really new, fresh style is going to appear. I don't know about that, because all the styles that appear are not really fresh. They're more a mixture of all things, but I'm pretty sure that's going to be a lot of new great art.
Our time is up now, but thanks for talking to us, and congratulations on the film. I think it's something special. Absolutely. So well done on all the success.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for talking.
Thank you for your interest.
Thanks very much again to Sven for taking the time to talk to us.
And next week,
interesting guy.
And next week on the show, we are going to be talking to the actor in the film who plays Sven, Félix de Givry, who is really terrific in the film, and we'll be talking more about Eden then, I'm sure.
Absolutely. So I guess we can talk about a little bit of tech. Of course, Comic-Con was on...
Last weekend,
mm-hmm. kind of. Yeah.
We'll get to that in a few moments.
Yeah.
But what did you have to say about this transmitter?
Well, I mean, Comic-Con, of course, is kind of this
Nerd haven.
It's a nerd haven, yes, exactly. It's like where all the nerds go to nerd out with fellow nerds.
Yeah.
How many times can I say nerd in one sentence?
Three.
So they came out with this thing for Star Trek people who are really interested in Star Trek. It's Kirk's transmitter. Now, I don't know if you remember from the original series, they had like these kind of communicators for Spock and Kirk.
Yeah, yeah.
So they could, you know, like... They could talk to each other and stuff.
Yeah.
They looked like flip-up phones.
Yeah.
So they actually made one, and it looks really, really high quality.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks so nice. It's Bluetooth.
Oh.
It connects to your phone, and you can use it to talk. You can keep your phone in your pocket use your Kirk.
Well, it's basically a Bluetooth headset.
It's basically a Bluetooth headset. It has a microphone on there. It has a speaker, so you can hear what the other person is saying. I mean, it's actually quite a nice device if you're into Star Trek,
which many people are.
I mean, many people are.
I like Star Trek.
Yeah,
I think the J.J. Abrams films are absolutely terrific. Original series. I'm not a huge fan of the kind of 90s shows, but.
And did you watch the original series?
Yeah, I've seen most of it.
Yeah, I've seen a bit of it. I mean, it's geeky. That's for sure.
Oh no, it's
extremely low.
The original series is very enjoyable. I mean,
it is. Yeah.
Some of the acting in it is actually surprisingly good. But I mean, Leonard Nimoy, the king. Rest in peace.
So yeah, I mean, this thing, you'd be able to hook it up to your Android phone or your iPhone.
Ooh.
I mean, it's
I have serious. I have neither.
Windows phone always gets neglected. It's kind of a bit scary. That's all I had to say about that. But I guess talking about other tech,
do you know the price?
They haven't announced it.
Okay.
It's just a first look at it. It's kind of like a beta device, so I don't know how well it's going to be. But the other thing, I don't know if you've seen, you know, the GoPros, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're so popular. Mm. Everybody has GoPros now.
They've really taken off the...
They're these tiny little cameras. Mm. You can put them wherever you want. You can use these little suction cups to put them on your car, your bike, you've got put them on your helmet, whatever. Like, they're really, really great.
Mm.
And the Hero 3... The Hero 3, which was... Well, I mean, they've released the Hero 4 now. That'll do 30 frames per second 4K video.
Nice.
Which is pretty nice.
It's beautiful.
But the most popular one that's been getting all the press in the last week has been the Hero 4 Session.
Mm.
It's this tiny, tiny little GoPro. It's probably... They say it's 40% the size of the Hero 4.
Wow.
You can basically put it anywhere. I've seen videos of people putting it into glasses and then drinking out of the glass.
All right.
So you can see what it looks like from the bottom of the glass. It's this tiny, tiny little device. It's waterproof without any cages. You know, Hero 4, you have to put it in a waterproof cage to protect it. So you don't need any cages or anything. You can just bring it wherever you want. It's got a little case adapter, so you can put it on any GoPro kind of accessories and stuff. And it's like $400.
Wow.
$350, $400, I think. So it's a pretty good deal. It doesn't do 4K because it's so small.
Oh, no.
But,
Can't live without my 4K video.
Yeah. I'm actually, because I can shoot 4K on my phone, but I can't shoot 4K on my really high quality expensive camera.
It epitomizes modern technology.
I've been looking for a 4K camera for a long time.
Yeah.
A cheap one. The Sony A7S is probably the cheapest, like, somewhat decent, like, will take DSLR
lens. How much does it cost?
$2,500.
Super cheap, folks.
Super cheap.
Super cheap.
That's the cheapest I could find. Mm. And my phone takes 4K. And it actually looks kind of decent. I mean, it's not like... It doesn't look like it's upscaled or anything. Yeah. You know, it's actually... No, yeah. It's legitimate enough. You know, it's not... It's not the worst thing in the world.
Mm.
So, yeah. I mean, that's all the tech I got to talk about this week.
Okay.
Let's talk about Comic-Con.
All right. Let's talk about Comic-Con. So, Comic-Con is always a favorite of mine as somebody who... tries to maintain a website about film and television news. Comic-Con is the big week for traffic boosting and just working a lot and putting up articles and stuff. This year's Comic-Con was really kind of uneventful by standards of the past few years. Past few years, we have guest surprises and big announcements and casting and all sorts of stuff. I mean, this year, the big thing was that we got 2/3, 2.5 big trailers released online. Two intentionally, one not. Well, 1.5 intentionally, because one wasn't really a trailer. So we got this Batman v Superman new trailer, which is like 4 minutes long. It's just a ridiculous amount of footage, considering this film doesn't come out for until next March. Yeah, it's a well-made trailer. It's, as somebody who watches probably 17 trailers for films every day, it's one of the best trailers I've ever seen. But that's not in terms of what they actually show. I mean, I think this film looks abominable, but the actual trailer in terms of the editing and the music and just the manner in which they are marketing this film, I think it's they've done a tremendous job. And whoever designed this trailer and its structure, I think, should be given an award. However, the film, no way has it been sold to me. And then Warner and DC, who released this trailer, they also, at the same panel on last Saturday, they showed a trailer for Suicide Squad, which is somewhat of a companion film to Batman versus Superman. It's about all of these sort of infamous DC villains, including, you know, the Joker and Harley Quinn and Deadshot. And that trailer, because it was, that film has not coming out till next August, and that trailer was slightly incomplete, but because a lot of pirated versions were up online and a lot of people saw them, and although not a huge amount, they weren't on YouTube, but they were on Instagram and Vimeo, I saw it, and then Warner released it officially the next day, which was probably a good decision in terms of preventing more piracy. Although it wasn't a very good trailer, so I don't think it benefited them there, because it didn't have a lot of interesting footage, because clearly the film is still shooting and there just wasn't a lot to show. Did you watch these trailers?
I did. So is Batman good or is he bad?
He's good.
And is Superman good or is he bad?
He's good. But
wait, so why are they trying to, like,
you see, it's so complicated.
Yeah, it's not as simple
Superman
as...
Superman is good... Good man.
Is good man.
This is how I talk in super simple terms.
Superman. Super, good man.
Superman. Good man.
Batman. Yeah. Good man.
Then Superman, like, you know, he
did some bad stuff.
He fought...
At the end of...
Well, he saved the world
spoilers, by the way.
He saved the world by defeating a nemesis who wanted to take over Earth. And in the process, he killed a lot of people,
so,
which was a fail. But he saved billions of other people being
a little bit stupid and not seeing the bigger picture.
So that, yeah, exactly.
He killed loads of people,
but he saved, you know, billions of others.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, a legal case against him for damage, obviously.
Damages.
And Batman is upset because he thinks that Superman should be sued for this, and they have a fierce legal battle over this. But they end up fighting and flying to the skies. I mean, the real villain of this film is Lex Luthor, who's being played by Andy Samberg.
Like, yeah.
Oh no, Jesse Eisenberg. So I don't know nor care. This is just an attempt to make money, but they've thrown everything but the kitchen sink into this film. It has stuff in the Wild West and people underwater and Wonder Woman and Aquaman and just loads of fighting and shooting and explosions and flying, and it'll make a lot of money. I will go to see it, obviously, because, you know, Batman.
Cool.
Yeah, you can just hear the enthusiasm radiating from me right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So Comic-Con otherwise was a whole lot of not a lot.
Yeah.
Michael, what's your hot new track of the week?
My hot new track of the week. Well, you know, I love listening to music.
You really do.
I listen to a lot of music.
You listen to music right now.
I'm listening to music right now. The hot new track of the week. Music.
Are you going to play it?
No.
Okay.
Well, I'll put it in over the top.
Okay. You can hear, it's great. I love it.
But you know, I always listen to albums. I'm not like a track guy. I don't like put together playlists of,
which is why I'm testing your allegiances by making you choose a track every week.
So
it's like Sophie's Choice over
it's
here.
It's pretty tough. So the new Alabama Shakes album came out maybe a few months ago now, two months ago.
Probably February or March.
I think it was April. And I'm a huge fan of Alabama Shakes. They're a great band. They're kind of like an old style R&B, not what R&B is known as now.
Like
which
the
is
Who
like,
R&B.
Like the Who R&B. Well, like Aretha Franklin.
R&B.
Like Aretha Franklin R&B.
Yeah.
That's kind of what...
Powerful female vocal.
That's what the lead singer is this really, really powerful vocalist. Mm. And her voice is obviously being compared to Aretha Franklin's. She's the next Aretha Franklin, blah, 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 blah. Really great singer. So they came out with their first album in 2012, I want to say. And that was a really raw kind of. It was a very vintagey sounding. It was all done on tape.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty cool sound. They had some very, very catchy... It's kind of a fusion of a lot of things, and they have their own sound, and that's why they're so popular. This new album that's come out, Sound and Color, is a slightly different album. Very experimental. They're trying out a lot of different sounds. This was some tracks. You can hear the tracks where it's recorded in tape. But a lot of tracks, they used Pro Tools the crap out of that. Mm. There's a lot of kind of modern, kind of different instruments being played in it. But one of my favorite songs, this is my hot new track of the week on this album, is Dunes. And that's the third song... Or is it the second song? I think it's the third song in the album.
Dunes.
Yeah, it's the third song because the first song is like an intro, then they have the one, and then they have Dunes.
The one
of their singles.
Yeah,
it is. Don't Wanna Fight. And then they have Dunes.
I don't want to fight either, Michael, but we have to find out the name of the song.
Dunes was recorded all on tape, and that's what I love the warm sound. The vocals are just whatever they did. Just such a warm. The song is a build up, so it starts off very softly, but by the end it's like this really like hitting kind of like a huge.
All the songs you recommend to me are quite like that.
They are. Yeah.
Last week's hot new track was like
a
Iron
huge
Sky.
Build. Iron Sky is a huge.
Before we played the Norah Jones song from months ago,
which was
very
like
similar
just a massive build up. I love songs that don't have build ups. But they're like the songs that I think you would like.
Yeah,
That's why I picked them. Don't Wanna Fight is also a great song, but I'm going to say Dunes is probably my favorite song on the album.
Okay. Dunes by Alabama Shakes. And Michael, question.
That's the short answer.
Is it on Apple Music?
Yes, it is.
So you can get that on Apple Music now. Get your 90-day free... Are we doing an ad for Apple Music? I don't even know anymore.
We're not going to do an ad for...
rubbish service.
I wouldn't say that now. It's fine. I'm not going to do an ad. Yeah, it's explicit as well, just to let you know.
Oh, dear.
They have one F-word in it.
We have children listening. Well, we probably have one F-word in this episode.
Yeah, exactly.
We will later on.
No, we don't mark it as explicit. So. Yeah. All right, let's move on.
Michael, you put something in this document here, and
I don't know if I did.
You put it under entertainment.
I did.
At subcategory, and you said Lucian's vegetarianism.
This fascinates me.
Okay.
Because you call yourself a vegetarian.
But I always clarify.
Most of the time you do clarify. Hmm. But you do call yourself a vegetarian. Now, I don't know if it's the right use of the word vegetarian.
It's just a very broad term for what I am.
You eat chicken.
I eat chicken.
You eat fish.
I eat fish.
You just don't eat what? Red meat.
Pork.
Pork or beef.
Beef. But pork's not red meat.
Pork's not red meat, right?
So I don't eat pork.
So you just don't
eat... Or turkey or pheasant or duck. I mean, the only things I eat are chicken and fish. I've never in my life have I eaten pork or beef ever. Not once.
Right. Now, I know a, a few vegetarians. My mom wouldn't consider herself a vegetarian, but she regularly goes for vegetarian dishes just because she prefers them.
Yeah.
She'll eat meat, but just because she prefers them. So, and I, there was actually a guy who was over, a friend who was over, and he's a very strict vegetarian.
Mm.
And the reason why he is a vegetarian is because he thinks that killing animals and eating them is a very, very cruel thing.
Which is...
So he won't eat fish. Yeah. He won't... And we were joking about bringing him out because we got a new boat, bringing him out fishing. But, like, he won't eat fish. He won't eat chicken. He will literally not eat any meat.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to know, like, why... What is your reason for only eating chicken and fish?
Oh, simply hypocrisy. Nothing more. I mean, I... So, you know, people say, why are you vegetarian? Well, I say, you know, I mean, I won't... You know, I don't need to get into specifics if it's just a person I'm briefly talking to, but I say, mm-hmm. well, it's not for religious reasons. It's not for health reasons. It's not for dietary reasons. It is for ethical reasons because okay. of the, you know, killing of the animals, which I don't think humans have a God-given right to do. However... I don't feel strongly enough about it that I won't make exceptions and compromises and such, which is why I'm more than happy to consume a chicken and a fish.
That just baffles now, me. See, you do not now, eat I know pork people, and beef yeah, now, because
other people might make excuses. Other people might say, oh, but, you know, chickens, they ain't as intelligent as cows and pigs, but I'm not going to make excuses. I just like eating chicken and fish.
Okay.
And I would like eating other things too, but I've managed to draw a line which I have yet to cross with all other meats. And someday I probably will start eating pork and I'll never stop. But that day is yet to come and I don't wish it to come because I like being able to know that I am slightly less than everyone else contributing
but it is kind of a healthy,
to the death of animals.
It's a health thing too, though. I mean,
I guess. I mean,
eating red meat is not good for you. It's full of fat a lot of the time.
I eat a lot of other kinds of foods for protein intake as well. Like I eat a lot of other kinds of foods to compensate for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's not much more. But okay. I've grown up in an environment where a lot of people are vegan, you know, gluten-free kind of thing. So my way of doing things where it's literally pork, beef, and a few other things is
very normal.
It's it's considered disgusting. People say, how could you? You're
really?
So cruel. How could you eat eggs? How could you eat... Although I typically don't eat eggs just because I don't enjoy eggs, but I will eat them if they're in pancakes, for example. They go, how can you eat eggs? How can you eat butter? You make me sick. And I go, I'm trying my best. I've never eaten sausages or ham in my life. You know, I've tried, but it's
so
not good enough for some
people. So the difference between vegan and vegetarian...
Vegetarian, you don't eat dead animals. Vegan, you don't eat dead animals, and you don't eat the produce of animals.
You can't eat... You can't drink milk?
No. You can't eat dairy, you can't eat eggs, you can't... anything. I, frankly, don't really see the point. I mean, sure, if chickens are raised in cruel environments for the produce of eggs... But they're also not, and I would only ever buy free-range eggs.
Yeah.
And that's the solution. I don't think going off eggs entirely is a solution. And I think dairy obviously has a lot of health issues. And I think that if you consume less dairy and have substitutes instead, that's probably good for your health. But I generally, being vegan for ethical reasons is something which I've never entirely understood.
Yeah, okay.
And gluten-free. I won't even address that.
Gluten-free. Well, some people have
wheat causes people problems with their digestion. I'm sure it causes me problems, but gluten-free, just as a term, nothing else, just annoys me. Yeah, like, if you say, I don't eat wheat, I'd rather that. Gluten-free. I'm gluten-free,
man. All right.
Also, under entertainment, briefly, like, literally, I will spend 1 minute discussing this. The Emmy nominations came out yesterday.
All right, hit me with them.
Emmys are exciting. Well, okay, I don't have them in front of me here because, frankly, I could name them off the top of my head because they're boring.
I don't care. Just give me the interesting
ones. So, you know, we got some... Okay, big one for me. Parks and Recreation got nominated for Best Comedy. Mm-hmm. It was the final season this year. It's Last Chance. It is a fantastic show, one of the best comedies of the last 10 years. Absolutely brilliant. Never been nominated in this category, and it's nominated. And it's also nominated for Best Actress for Amy Poehler, which is great. Also, Jeff Daniels nominated Best Actor in a Drama for The Newsroom, which is fantastic news. Olive Kitteridge, which is this brilliant HBO miniseries on in November, got 4 acting nominations for, I think, 3 or 4. I know that Frances McDormand, Richard Jenkins, Bill Murray, and Zoe Kazan all got nominated for that, and that's really great. and the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt nominated. Titus Burgess got nominated for Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy Series.
Yay.
He said he will not be performing Pinot Noir at the ceremony because he said Pinot Noir only works when he's singing it in random locations.
That is
and on
true.
A stage,
yeah,
it wouldn't have the same effect.
Yeah,
he got nominated, as did Ellie Kemper, as did The Show, which is great. There was an interesting one where this Netflix show, Grace and Frankie, which has... Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, Martin Sheen, Sam Waterston. The only acting nomination that show got was for Lily Tomlin, which I think is fine. I think the show is not very good, but I think she is probably, she's definitely a better comic actress than Jane Fonda. But Sam Waterston and Martin Sheen absolutely deserve to be nominated for that. I got lost here. So yeah, that was, that's the Emmy nominations.
Is there an Emmy for podcasts?
No, it's all TV.
Ugh,
podcast awards.
Podcast.
They still exist?
They do. Yeah, they do. But you have to, like, your audience has to nominate you.
You have to get people to nominate you.
Yeah,
hundreds
and
of
like
times.
every week. Or
same as the Irish blog. Had it a minute ago.
Yeah, you adjust it yourself.
Yeah. I know the Irish blogging awards work the same way. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a bad way of doing things.
And you know who's hosting the Emmy Awards this year? Andy Samberg.
Oh my god. Andy Samberg. He's an interesting guy.
So, this week the annual report for 2014 of the British Board of Film Classification came out. And as you know, Michael, I'm a pretty big film classification nerd.
That's like your dream job.
Absolutely. Film censor, film classifier, my dream job. But this is a fascinating report. Just basically every film that came out last year gets a mention and why they rated it a certain way and comparing them. It's great. The most complaints received by a film this year, Michael, was?
Mr. Turner.
Did you see Mr. Turner?
I did not.
I saw Mr. Turner.
Did you?
Excellent film.
Okay, well, the film Mr. Turner classified 12A generated the most feedback in 2014. 19 members of the public complained about a sex scene in the film, though it needs to be kept in mind that this very low figure for most complained about film and is a tiny proportion of those who will ever have seen it. In the scene in question, Turner's clothed buttocks are seen clenching vigorously before the scene cuts to a close-up of his face and his thrusting head and shoulders.
Okay. Now, I saw Mr. Turner, and I did not know what certificate it was when I saw it. And when this scene came in, I was horrified. I thought, this is at least a 15-rated film. It was 12A. I'm appalled at this decision. This scene was very graphic. I mean, there's no nudity, but it's very graphic. Anyway, moving on to other film classification
stuff. I hope I did a good job in visualizing.
My favorite part of this report is the part where they address children's films and films that were rated U and seeing why certain films were rated a certain way. This is on page 18 of the document. And Michael, I think you should go to page 18 now and tell us something about Pudsey the Dog Movie. Now, the official title of this film is something that's caused me great anguish. The official title of the film is Pudsey the Dog Movie.
So Pudsey the Dog and then : the movie.
That's incorrect. The official title of the film is Pudsey the Dog Movie. There's no the.
Oh, really?
I asked and they said there's no the.
Well, it's a British comedy adventure about a mischievous dog who adopts a young family when they move to the country and becomes involved in a variety of amusing scrapes. The film originally contained a single use of the word bugger.
Oh, Michael, my ears. Explicit podcast. Explicit podcast.
Yeah, we're going to have to...
mark this as explicit.
Bag and tag this one. A term not treated by the BBFC as very mild bad language. The distributor chose to remove the word in order to ensure the film was suitable for young children, to whom it would likely appeal. The BBFC subsequently classed the film U with very mild bad language included in the BBFC insight to cover infrequent use of very mild terms such as bum.
Michael, you're disgusting. Stop using language like that. There's children listening. The final film that I was really interested by the rating of was the comedy. I know Michael and I are really excited to see this film. Nativity 3, Dude, Where's My Donkey? We were so excited for this. And
yeah.
Here's a clip from the Dude, Where's My Donkey theme song. So Nativity 3, Dude, Where's My Donkey, is a story about a man who loses his memory and must rely on others to remind him about both Christmas and his impending wedding. The distributor sought classification advice from the BBFC in two stages before submitting it formally. An early version of the film contained a single use of the word ass in the context of a donkey shaking its rear.
Oh, come on.
And we advised the distributor that this use would be acceptable as very mild bad language at you. A later version of the film contained repeated uses of shake that ass in song lyrics, and without the contextual justification of the earlier use, we informed the company that the film was likely to be passed PG. When the final version of the film was submitted for formal classification, the company had chosen to replace all uses of the word ass with the word thing. Both versions of the film contained the phrase elf off. This is one of my favorite sentences of all time now that I'm about to read. Both versions of the film also contained the phrase elf off, said by an elf during an elf-style ghetto slang scene. I have to get a copy of this film. What is an elf-style ghetto slang scene? since this wordplay takes a euphemistic form rather than a direct replacement for strong language, it was acceptable within the wider context of the U category. Yeah. So those are just some highlights from our from this brilliant report, and I recommend you go to bbfc.co.uk and read the whole thing.
Everything.
It's brilliant. I read the entire thing from start to finish, and it is an absolute page-turner. I guarantee you.
All right. I think it's time for Statistics of the Week.
Statistics of the Week.
Statistics of the Week.
Are we going to play that awesome music?
Yes, we are.
I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, it's like a bluesy thing.
Yeah.
All right.
These are all about being killed. Very morbid Statistics of the Week this week. These are all about ways you can die.
Okay, these
a
are
million
more,
ways to die in a podcast studio.
Than, okay.
A million ways to die in a podcast.
In the West.
In the West, yeah.
Okay. I might as well go with the first one. The odds of dying while in the bathtub are 1 in 1 million.
So
that's kind of high.
I mean, a lot of people die in the bathtub because every person in the world who dies through certain suicidal acts usually would commit that act in the bathtub. That's how it's portrayed in films, at least.
It's a pretty cinematic way to die.
Yeah, but people are going to the bath and they slit their wrists, and that's how people kill themselves in films. Then you have people who die in the bath because they drown.
Yeah.
Or they, you know, children who die in the bath, which is a horrifically common occurrence.
Yeah,
or you have people who have heart attacks in the bath, or people who have died in the bath because of electric shocks or because of some sort of accident that way. So to me, I feel as if 1 in 1 million is extremely rare. I would expect people to die in the bath more frequently than that.
I've never taken a bath before, so I'm pretty safe.
You've never taken a bath?
Only when I was like,
I mean,
a baby.
I haven't taken a bath in
When I was a baby, I used to, to have baths. But I've never taken
only
a bath.
Bath I've taken in the last 10 years would have been probably in a hotel somewhere. Where it's not my water that we're wasting. I'm not paying these water charges. So yeah, no, that actually seems pretty rare to me. Anyway, next one. This one, odds of being killed by space debris: 1 in 5 billion. Now, how many people are there in the world right
7
now?
7 billion.
7 billion. So that means that basically in the entire lifespan of everyone currently living on Earth, one person will die by space debris. But I have a question.
Oh, okay.
Does that include people in space?
It probably does.
Does that include Dr. Ryan Stone from Gravity?
Yeah,
or is it just people,
just
people who are standing on the Earth's surface and will get hit in the head? Like,
it probably includes, I mean, it's everybody.
How many people are in space though? Like 20 maximum?
No.
Less? Like 8?
No more.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's probably like, There's a lot more people in space than you.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Because in films, it's always very, you know, solitude.
The odds of being killed by poison are 1 in 86,000.
Now, is that intentional poisoning, like somebody trying to murder you by putting something in your drink? Or is that being poisoned by black mold? No matter what we told, we have to eat the mold. Because you can be poisoned by accident. You can be poisoned by things in your garden, by certain.
Yeah, like I was poisoned by poison ivy.
Yeah, but I mean, you can be. But is that? Yeah, but it's death by poison.
But I didn't die. Yeah.
But if you could be poisoned by chemicals that are put into something and the company would pay your family, you could be poisoned by thalidomide. Yeah, anymore.
I'd say this is probably intentional poison.
Yeah.
Yeah, alright, let's move on.
The odds of being killed by freezing are 1 in 3 million.
That means three times more people die in the bathtub than die by freezing.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
It's pretty hard to freeze someone.
Yeah.
The odds of being killed by lightning are 1 in 2 million. You're more likely to die in the bathtub.
Yeah.
Than by lightning.
Oh, that seems perfectly reasonable. But the fact that you're more likely to be killed by lightning than by freezing.
I guess lightning seems more of an obvious way to die.
But I mean, loads of people die in the bathtub. Frankly, I question the legitimacy of that statistic as much as I did with that LinkedIn one we had last week.
Wow.
Because I feel like a lot more people than that must die in the bathtub.
We watched too many movies, man.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
The odds of being killed in a car crash are 1 in 5,000.
That seems...
I've actually just realized a question. I've just realized a flaw with these statistics. We don't know. So 1 in 5,000 being killed in a car. Does that mean that 1 in 5,000 people currently living in the world who will die as a result of a car accident? Does it mean that 1 in 5,000 people in car accidents will die? No, obviously not, because most people who are in car accidents will die. Or does it mean that 1 in 5,000 people that die every year die in a car crash on average?
Which is it?
The first of the middle one was nonsense, but. Who knows? Anyway, that seems reasonable enough. You go next.
The odds of being killed in a tornado are 1 in 2 million.
So that's more people killed. So the same number of people killed in tornadoes.
That's because more people are. It's because tornadoes are more dangerous than lightning, but people take more precautions when there's a tornado around. A lot of people will just go walking in lightning. They don't realize that if they are the closest way for the lightning to get to ground, well, they're going to get electrocuted. Yeah.
Speaking of tornadoes, Sharknado 3 came out this week. Or next week.
I don't know. Let's move on.
Don't plan to watch. The odds of being killed by falling out of bed are, once again, 1 in 2 million.
I used to fall out of bed a lot. I used to fall out of bed like a few times every single week when I was younger.
Should have bought a gate.
I used to wake up on the floor.
Was it a high bed off the ground?
So I didn't do any harm to myself.
Yeah.
I might have been a little bit stiff.
Mm.
You see, if you're in a bunk bed and you have no gates to keep you fenced,
then you're going to be killed by falling out of bed.
Yep. I don't think. It's pretty hard to die from falling out of bed.
Yeah.
You could be pretty sore.
I'd imagine so.
Yeah. At least 1 in 2 million.
Our final statistic this week. Yep. The odds of being killed in a plane crash. 1 in 25 million.
Yep. Yep. That's because there's so many planes.
I'm going to reassure myself. I'm going to listen back to me saying this every time I'm on a plane to reassure myself.
I have absolutely zero fear of flying.
I do.
At all. You do have a fear of flying?
I mean,
my mom is.
Like, I'm happy to fly, but once I'm on the plane, like, I do get anxious.
Do you?
Sort of. Not terribly, though. It's mostly to do with turbulence. I'm always just afraid that the plane will land upside down or something.
I have absolutely no fear at all.
I used to not. It's only the last few years I have.
You know, like, you see the technology that goes into it. You see how incredibly.
I guess the Ryanair planes just seem like you look out the window. We always get seats above the wing, right?
Yeah.
And I always look out the window and I just see. And the wing just looks so insubstantial and so old, and it always has black dirt all over it. It just looks like something that could fall apart in a matter of seconds if a big cloud can just go. And then the plane flips down.
The thing you have to realize is that the wings have to be able to move.
Yeah.
To be able to get the airflow.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they're so safe. They're incredibly safe.
So it's time now for another one of our favorite segments, and that is Nicolas Cage film.
Oh, yeah.
Of the week. Featuring, I'm going to say it's exactly the same way every week, featuring Bill Murray as the president. Jingle time.
Nicolas Cage film of the week.
Michael, you love Nicolas Cage film of the week, don't you?
It's my favorite part of this show.
I know you were up late last night
Than the interview.
I know you were up late last night watching G-Force.
I was.
So tell me, Michael, what did you think of G-Force upon second viewing?
It was pretty bad. It wasn't the best movie.
Classic that we remembered it as.
Yeah. I really liked it when it first came out. It was quite a popular movie, wasn't it?
Not really.
Was it not?
I don't think
they
so.
They I saw
been,
it in
if
the
it, if it had been successful, they would have made a sequel to it. So.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
but the animation is quite good.
Yeah, so we got loads of reviews from listeners. Sadly, we don't have time to read them out. Because they don't exist.
Because we really, we're running out of time.
And also, no one contacted me about getting my signed Blu-ray copy. So, clearly, not a lot of interest in that.
Yeah.
But this week's Nicolas Cage film of the week is a new release. It only came out this week. And, Michael, you want to click on it? And find out what it is.
All right.
This week's Nicolas Cage of the week is The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened? Now, what's interesting about this film is that Nicolas Cage isn't actually in it, but it's all about Nicolas Cage. It is a documentary. It was funded through crowdfunding online, and it is a film about a film that was never made called Superman Lives, directed by Tim Burton, starring Nicolas Cage as Superman. A film that was developed and then just never got made. Nicolas Cage did screen tests, he took photos, he got a costume design fitted, all this. And this documentary came out, it's 2 hours long, has interviews with everybody except for Nicolas Cage. But everyone in it is talking about Nicolas Cage, and he appears in animated form, and there's photos of him in archive footage. And I've watched about half of it. It's available online to stream now. Michael, where can you get this film?
I have no idea. I guess you can get it. I was just watching the trailer here for it. I guess you can get... This is going all weird for me. I guess... On YouTube?
No, not on YouTube.
No, I know.
That's the website.
You can watch it on... Oh, it's what is
yeah?
It
it's like TDOSLWH.com, and you can watch it for really
reasonable.
Look at the prices.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you can buy it for you can buy The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened Super Pack for $30.
That seems like a ripoff.
You can buy The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened Mid Pack, whatever the hell that is.
Yeah.
For $20, but the amount of stuff you get lots of stuff.
You do.
You can just buy it on its own for.
Or
$15.
Or you can torrent it.
Wait, which
we do not recommend. We don't approve of torrenting.
I do not recommend you do that.
Neither do I.
Yeah.
I really don't recommend you do that.
Okay, so it's time for public service announcements.
Public service announcements.
All right.
Okay, we are going to start public service announcements this week with a little throwback. Do you remember Sarah Palin, Michael?
I do.
Well, she was that nice lady who almost became U.S. vice president back in 2008.
Right.
I think one great quote, one of my favorite quotes of Sarah Palin's is, "If God had not intended for us to eat animals," I mean, I'm doing the wrong voice. "If God not intended for us to eat animals, how come he made them out of meat?" Now, she didn't say that in an interview. It wasn't a slip of the tongue. She wrote and published that in a book, in a hardcover book. This is a woman who almost became vice president. Anyway.
Wow.
But today specifically, we are going to remember the day that Ms. Palin decided to rewrite a classic verse by our favorite poet, Dr. Seuss. I know you're a big Dr. Seuss fan,
huge
Michael.
Huge Dr. Seuss fan.
Big Dr. Seuss fan here, yeah. Too. Cat in the Hat. Wonderful. Wonderful. And, you know, all of his work.
Green Eggs and Ham.
The Lorax. Green Eggs and Ham. Speaking of that, you know, Sarah Palin, she likes Green Eggs and Ham, but you know what she likes more than Green Eggs and Ham? I don't know. A lot of things. But she likes changing the lyrics of the words of Green Eggs and Ham. So, you might have heard this before, but, you know, let's just play this clip of her her version of Green Eggs and Ham.
Let's take a listen.
Dr. Seuss. Who'd have thunk? Who'd have thunk? Yeah, good idea. Maybe I'll just ad-lib something. Yeah, I'm sure. Okay. But there he was reading it on the floor of the Senate, and through airwaves, he was telling his kids, "I'm thinking of you, thinking of all our kids." And I have 5 kids. I have 5 kids. So reading Green Eggs and Ham over all those years to each one, you know, man, you totally have it memorized by the time, especially by the time Trig was born. So I had to spice it up a bit. And little Trig, lucky little fella, his bedtime story, now it goes something like this. "I do not like this Uncle Sam. I do not like his healthcare scam. I do not like..."
I do not like these dirty crooks or how they lie and cook the books. I do not like when Congress stills. I do not like their crony deals. I do not like this spying, man. I do not like, oh yes, we can. I do not like this spending spree. We're smart, we know there's nothing free. I do not like reporter smug replies when I complain about their lies. I do not like this kind of hope, and we won't take it. Nope, nope, nope.
That was Sarah Palin's version of Green Eggs and Ham. You know, she's a smart lady.
That was the fakest laugh I've ever heard.
Anyway,
so yeah, that's Sarah Palin's version of Green Eggs and
Ham.
Wait,
that's all you have for public service announcements?
No, I've got more.
Okay, good.
In other public service announcements, a kindergarten in Melbourne, Australia. Now, Michael, we're a fan of Melbourne, aren't we?
Yeah, we're especially fond of the Melbourne sound.
The Melbourne Sound, a song by Maddie Lincoln feat. Mandras.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Maddie Lincoln or Maddie Reynolds? Maddie Lincoln. And, well, Melbourne, a kindergarten in Melbourne, have changed the lyrics. Not of Melbourne Sound, not of Green Eggs and Ham, but of the traditional nursery rhyme, Baba Black Sheep.
What?
Are you a fan of Baba Black Sheep?
One of my favorite nursery
rhymes. One of your absolute favorites. And
Baba
you think,
Black Sheep, have you any work?
You think that the words of that song being Baba Black Sheep make it what it is? It gives Baba Black Sheep its heart and soul?
Yeah. It's like the root.
This kindergarten changed the words.
Okay.
Staff at a school in Melbourne's east side expressed their concerns over the connotations of the word black, which has now been altered to mirror Australia's multicultural society. The word black was replaced so that the rhyme read Baba Pink Sheep, or my favorite, Baba Rainbow Sheep. Don't know about you, Michael, but I have never in my life seen a rainbow sheep. Should we be treating our kids realism, if nothing else?
And any pink sheep you've ever seen has probably, their wool have probably been dyed pink. But black sheeps naturally occur. That's why the nursery rhyme says, ba ba black sheep, because black sheeps exist.
Teachers were also troubled by the line, one for the little boy who lives down the lane, which they believed had sexist overtones and has since been adjusted. Now, I think it's time for a frank discussion here. Can someone tell me how... It's time for our token bomb. How the fuck is that racist and sexist? It's ba ba black sheep.
Yeah, it's a little kid's nursery rhyme.
Okay, so the sexism probably comes from the fact that the little boy gets the wool, right? He gets a bag of wool. No girl gets wool. Oh. One for the... what is it? Black
it's
sheep.
A story. It could be about a girl or a boy. I mean, it's...
Yes, sir. Three bags. Four. One for the master and one for the dame. No. One for the dame. Yeah. I'm making this up. And one for the little boy who lives in the lane.
Yeah, I mean, if that was one for the little girl who lives down the lane, no problem with that.
You wouldn't say that was sexist. Well, you might if you were a man, but...
But I wouldn't say that because I don't care, honest.
I just don't get how black sheep is a racist term. Sheep are black.
I mean...
Black is
the black sheep is a metaphor.
Blackboard, what are we calling it now? Board? Rainbow board?
The black sheep is a metaphor
for the person who doesn't fit with the crowd.
Right, but that's not...
It doesn't relate to people of black skin color.
No.
It is irrelevant.
No.
Completely irrelevant.
No. Anyway.
So yeah, that's public service announcements.
Cool.
Slightly different to before, but you know, we'll do it again when I can come up with something.
Burp, burp, burp. All right, let's move on.
Okay. Michael, I think it might be time to end the show.
Thank God, I'm sneezing all over the place here. I'm very ill today. All right, Yeah. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the 99%.
Thank you, Michael, for inviting me into your beautiful studio.
No problem.
I love coming here. It's great.
Yeah.
Almost as much as I love recording at home on a crappy microphone with a whole, like, those things are armed. I have chocolate over my face right now. Actually, we have one more thing for public service announcements.
Theater of the mind.
I left it out. I'll just say it now. A German squirrel has been arrested and put in prison because he was reportedly stalking a woman.
That is brilliant.
Okay, fine. That's a true story. It's in the Telegraph today. Anyway. So thank you, Michael, for inviting me to your studio. It's beautiful here. And
yeah, and it's raining. It's absolutely raining.
It's raining. You can probably hear it.
Yeah. You will definitely be
I'm
able
actually
going to...
Can I just spin this around a bit?
Yeah, yeah. You'll definitely be able to hear that.
There you go. You can definitely hear it there.
It is absolutely lush.
Yeah. So thank you to our special guest today, Sven Hansen-Löf.
Yes.
And remind you,
great to talk
Eden
to
in cinemas next week. Mm-hmm. Inside Out is also out that day. Which did you go to see? Which did they go to see?
Both.
It's simple.
Both.
Inside Out and then Eden.
Yeah.
Or Eden and then Inside Out. I mean, Inside Out is more of a morning film. It's like, morning. Oh, actually, maybe not. It's very existentialist. Maybe you should watch it right before going to bed and then watch Eden early in the morning.
Yeah.
Taking ecstasy and stuff. Yeah. We don't approve of the taking of ecstasy. Any other recreational substances. No. So thanks to him, and next week we will be joined by Felix de Givry, his star of Eden. That's very exciting.
Right.
So the 99% is a co-production of Card Digital and BuzzHub Entertainment.
Yep.
Visit 99pshow.com for the latest episodes, and be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, on Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Thanks to iTunes, we were new and noteworthy again this week. We charted above several shows that are funded by license fee-paying money, so I was proud of that.
Great.
Your favorite podcast app?
I recommend Pocket Cast, by the way.
Carb Digital, fantastic company. Great design, great hosting. They bake rainbows in the sky. Mm-hmm. They manufacture pink sheep.
Yeah.
CarbDigital.com.
The official 99% website over at 99pshow.com is a production of Carb Digital.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Of course, this show is also a co-production of BuzzHub.info, the number one place for all your TV show, movie, culture, news.
True that.
Fantastic site, so check out BuzzHub.info.
You can follow us on Twitter. We are twitter.com/99pshow, facebook.com/99pshow. Shout out to Phil Brindelow. We are on instagram.com/99pshow. You can email 99pshow@gmail.com or, you know, lucian@buzzhub.info, Michael. I am Revolucionara on Twitter. You are MacAndrewTweets.
MacAndrewTweets, that's correct.
And we will see you in a week.
Absolutely.
For more Hot for Your Buzz.
See you then.
Adios, amigos.